Welcome back to the People Show. Josh Elliott Wolf, Dominic Tremati, filling in for Bick Nazar today.
Doing the damage.
Coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Brooke, yeah, well, that was a good Brooke Lord impression.
I've worked long enough with Brooke. I can kind of do a Brooke.
You can text in 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep those texts coming in. By the way, before the break, I mentioned that I said Matthew Tkachuk played with a broken rib. A couple texts coming in. Broken sternum. My bad. Still, played through it. He still played through it. We'll get into...
Thank you for owning up to your mistake,
yeah,
Josh.
You know what? I own it. That's on me. Let's welcome in Alex Gonge-Ruzic of One Soccer. Big match on the weekend for Canada, defeating Trinidad and Tobago to qualify for the Copa America. Alex, just your thoughts on that. Thank you for taking the time. And yeah, just your thoughts on that match over the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Always a pleasure, gents, to come on and chat. And pretty surreal. That's kind of the vibe, just saying it out loud, right? Canada's going to the Copa America. Obviously, such a sweet sentiment. As for the match itself, look, it wasn't Canada's prettiest performance, let's say. They were, you know, first 60 minutes, it was a bit hairy there at times. They were struggling to get into the game and get the rhythm they can play with. But look, in the end, they got the two goals they needed, and now they got to go to the Copa America this summer, which is absolutely massive.
You think it was a matter of tactics, Alex? Because when I was watching the match, and I was just thinking, like, I know they changed things on the corner set pieces in the second half, but there were times when I was looking at how they were playing, and I felt boring. It's such a weird contrast to how well they were playing in the lead up to Qatar that now watching this, especially against a side like Trinidad and Tobago, and not to slack on them, but they are not Mexico. They're not the United States. They're certainly not the level of competition that Canada will face at Copa. Like, how do you explain the lack of play in the opening half against Trinidad and Tobago? Because if Canada wants to take itself seriously in this sport, they can't be just getting by against minnows, essentially.
Yeah, I think it was there was a lot left to be desired. Let's just say about the tactical, you know, side of things. I think there were some few tweaks that were made specific for Trinidad and Tobago. Some of them ended up working. For example, I was really impressed with the idea of having the center back step very aggressively. I was a bit surprised to see that it end up working. I think it caught TNT by surprise on a lot of counters. But on the flip side of it, Canada looked completely out of ideas in the final third. They were struggling with the ball. This is a team that you see the quality that they have in their ranks. There's familiarity there, too. It's not like it was a completely foreign starting lineup. Like Moustakio and Kone have played a lot together in the midfield. You know, Davies and Buchanan out at wingback is something we've seen a lot of. David and Laren up front playing together. So it's not like there was a huge tweak in personality either. So, it was a bit surprising. And it shows that there is definitely a lot of work to still be done tactically. I think this was more a game where luckily Canada reminded everyone that this is still a very talented team. This is a team that when they get moments like they did on that first goal where everything just clicked for a moment, Tejan Buchanan beat a runner, he hit the ball to Ike Ugbo. Ike Ugbo made a nice layoff. Kyle Laren finished it. That's the sort of quality they have. But no, 100%, it was something where you'd like to see them show that over the course of a game, especially in a match like this where they were comfortable for minute one. But they didn't dominate. That's what they should be doing in matches like this because, yeah, when you're going up against Argentina, they might only give you 2-3 minutes of the match. If that, you're going to have to be way more on your toes. You're going to have to show a lot more quality in those little minutes that they're going to give you. And the fact that they weren't able to do it in a match where they were expected to dominate, yeah, those are little worries to keep an eye on.
Mauro Biello's been on the job now for a couple months. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, it's a lot to process. I mean, he's played only 4 games, which is wild to say because it's been, you know, 4 or 5 months. I think it's a mixed bag because there's some good. There's definitely some good. I think what really impressed me this camp in particular, despite making some tough calls, he drops Milan Borjan, Steven Vitoria, Junior Hoylett. I think calls that were fair on paper because there was a lot of youngsters who were knocking on the door who should have been in much earlier, who he called in. The camaraderie in the group appeared to be you know, as good as it's been in a while. Like, it looked like the vibes were good. The players were you know, a little more open, a little more relaxed than they've been as of late, which, you know, with everything that's kind of been going on since when they qualified for the World Cup, that was nice to see. So I think that's a credit to Biello as, you know, maybe a man manager and the way he was able to kind of lift the group. But on the flip side, I just haven't seen enough tactically from this team. You know, across these four games, they've made a lot of tactical errors, you know, approach kind of always being a bit off, maybe the lineup selection as well. You know, always being, it feels like it's one or two players off, even within this game. I thought the substitutions, it felt like Canada heading into halftime with the game kind of lifeless as it was, it would have been a great chance to insert some fresh legs, because you saw at the end of the game how Jacob Schaffelberg, Jason Russell Rowe, Mathieu Chouinard broke the game open. I would have loved to see them at halftime. Like, it's a big, you know, it would have been a bit bold to sub out maybe a Tejan Buchanan or someone like that, but he was struggling in that first half. Why not throw in some fresh legs, use that depth that you have now at your disposal? Because it worked out in the end, but maybe if TNT grabs a 50th minute goal, it's a whole different story, because that's what happened against Jamaica, right? They similar scenario where at halftime they could have made changes. They didn't. Jamaica adjusted, got them. So I think tactically there's been a lot left to be desired, and I think that's ultimately going to be Biello's undoing, because while, you know, maybe the good vibes could be what this team needed, I don't think so. I think this team needs a bit more tactically. I think, as we see, this is a group that's together. There's chemistry. For the most part, they've shown, you know, that brotherhood, as of course the famed word, as we've seen. But that next step for them is really finding that tactical identity. Who are they as a team? Where are those strengths? How are they going to play to them? So when they're playing top 10, top 15 teams, you can go in and be like, this is Canada's identity. This is how they want to play. Because right now, sitting here, we could talk about the strengths because we've seen these players so often, but I can't say that that tactical identity is there. And, you know, based on the four games we've seen of Mauro Biello, he hasn't imposed that either. And that's where I think you'd probably want maybe an outside coach to come in and bring that in while keeping some of those vibes, which is maybe where Biello could be a key assistant going forward too.
Alex Gonge-Ruzic joining us from One Soccer. And one thing I couldn't, like, just could not escape me while I was watching this match over the weekend is going on at the same time was the CONCACAF Nations League final. And I was sitting there watching Jamaica and USA thinking to myself, this is where Canada belongs. These are the matches Canada should be playing in. And just the simple fact that Canada wasn't there, the fact that we were playing Trinidad and Tobago to get into a tournament of the stature of Copa, that in itself felt like an indictment on Mauro Biello. Am I off on that feeling?
Oh, I think it's definitely reasonable, especially if you look at how the tournament played out, looking how lifeless Mexico looked yesterday in the final against the U.S. as the U.S. claimed a third straight Nations League final. It feels like right now the U.S. is clearly the top team in the region. But it feels like they're also, like, they're there for the picking, right? Like, Jamaica missing five of their starters who all, you know, so you saw some of those Jamaican guys who gave Canada a run for their money, right? Like, Shamar Nicholson, Leon Bailey, you know, there's, Damari Gray was another one. They were all missing from this camp for various reasons, injuries, suspensions, you know, withdrawing from the team. And they still went up against the U.S. missing all those guys. Probably should have won the game. it was that late own goal sunk them. You're thinking, this Canadian team, there is zero reason why, on paper, they shouldn't be at least, look, I'm not saying they should be going out and beating the U.S. The U.S. is still a very deeply talented and talented team, but they should be right there competing, taking that spot that Mexico seems to be leaving for them. And I think that's a bit frustrating that, you know, as Mexico really slipped over the last 2-3 years, that Canada, it feels like this year would have been a perfect time to really step up and make a statement. And now that waits for another year, and, you know, you never know in this sport. Maybe Mexico, things can change overnight, right? And I think you missed opportunities like this will loom large. So hopefully Canada heading into the next, you know, this Copa, there's a Gold Cup next year, there's another Nations League. This cycle, they really have to, because, you know, Mexico's been on the decline for a while now. Take advantage of it. That's the mentality they should have ahead of 2026.
For our listeners, can you just outline the significance of Copa America? They're going to open against the defending champion Argentina on June 20th in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Is it accurate to say that Copa is America's version of the Euros or African Cup of Nations or anything of that stature?
Yeah, I mean, it's a top 4 or 5 tournament in the world. and it's a very high level. And I think we're seeing it this week. Like, you have to remember the favorites, Argentina, they're fresh off winning a World Cup. They're the defending Copa America champions. You don't have to talk about how good they are. Brazil beat England this past week, right? England's expected to be a favorite at the Euros. Colombia went to Spain and beat them in Europe as well this week. Like, these South American teams are very good. And, you know, for a tournament like this, what's huge is that it's a competitive environment. Canada playing Argentina in the opening game, just for some context, the only other instance in which they could play Argentina in a competitive game is at a World Cup, right? Because they're not in the same region. They wouldn't be able to play them, you know, in qualifiers. It's friendlies or it's at a World Cup. So this is a rare, rare opportunity that you get to play them in a Copa America like this. It's essentially a dress rehearsal for the World Cup. Because after the World Cup, which, you know, we'll agree internationally is the top tournament, it is Copa America, it's Euros, it's AFCON, it's Asia Cup. Those are the kind of next up. Well, for Canada, you're not getting much of a better dress rehearsal for the World Cup, especially given that you're playing in Argentina. Peru and Chile as well, no jokes either. They're very stiff teams that have done well in South America before. So, no, I cannot understate how exciting it is to play teams of this caliber in a competitive environment, because that just really doesn't happen, period, outside your region. It's usually going to, you know, be U.S., Mexico, and to have this opportunity dropped in their laps, it's massive.
Alex, before we let you go, what do you think of the red kits now that we've seen them on the players?
Thankfully, they looked a lot better in person than they did in the first rendering, so I'll give them that. But look, all I'd have to say is if I were going to send over a proposal to the designer, just please, please make the collar even. I don't know why one side's white, one side's red. It really just throws off the entire vibe of the kit, because otherwise it's decent. I maybe not the biggest fan of the maroon, but it looks good on the play.
I don't know. I don't like this new trend of the crest in the middle rather than over the heart. That, for me, I don't like. I do like the white ones, though. Do you like the white ones?
Yeah, I think those look good. I mean, we'll have to see what they look like in person.
Right.
There's a fine line there between looking like a potential like baseball uniform versus like a footy one. But I think they got a lot more of the design elements right. And look, I can't be mad, because on that one, it's 13 lines for the 13 provinces. When's the last time there was anything unique on a
true,
Canada
very
kit,
true.
Right? It's all been templates. Yeah. So for that, I'm thankful at the very least.
Hey, Alex, really appreciate you taking the time, and thanks for this.
Yeah, no worries. Chat again soon, guys. Always a pleasure.
There is Alex Gange-Ruzic of One Soccer. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex Gange-Ruzic. I do, regarding the kits, I like the white ones. I didn't know about the 13 stripe thing.
Yeah, I just learned that.
Yeah. That's neat. I just preferred the look of it over the red ones anyway.
By the way, you know the Nike swoosh?
Yep.
Has the oval around it?
Yep.
They claim that it has, like, somehow Canada made that famous. I did a bunch of research. I could not find a single instance of when Canada made the Nike oval swoosh.
I think it looks cool. I
do too. I like it. But don't lie to us, Nike.
Canada will make it famous now. Hey, I don't know if you still have the breaking news sounder ready, Victor, but if we could hit it again.
Sportsnet 650, breaking news.
Two breaking news is in one show. Unprecedented. We were talking about Elias Lindholm in the first half of the show, and we got some news from Canucks practice at Batch Hockey, tweeting out, that's Brendan Batchelor, for the people that aren't aware that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no. Have you heard of him?
Oh.
He works here. Rick Tocchet says that Elias Lindholm will not play tonight and that he is day to day.
Still no word on that appointment.
Still no word on the appointment, but I think that shows us that it's not great. Or
okay,
at least, look,
it's
I'm not saying it's.
Don't catastrophize here.
Yeah.
Why are you fear mongering, Josh?
I'm not trying to fear monger. I'm just saying.
It's not great.
It's not. Well, is this great?
Well, it's not terrible.
I'm not saying it's terrible. It's just in the firmly nuts category.
Okay.
But yeah, he will not play tonight. No word on what injury it is, just that he did have an appointment.
Yeah.
And that he is now day to day. Speculate as you will, 650, 650, Dunbar Lumber text line.
I choose to look at this as an opportunity.
For who?
For both the team and the player. The player gets rest. Mm-hmm. He's been playing through an injury. I mean, Tocchet came out and said as much.
Yep.
And the team gets to, you know, tinker with the lines a little bit, experiment.
So I do think this, like, they kind of need Dakota Joshua back now. And I do wonder what these lines look like when Joshua's back, because we've seen Lindholm on the third line,
mm-hmm.
and he's been between Podkolzin and, well, I guess they kind of shifted it around a little bit last game, but I don't know. Well, I'm all for mixing up the lines a little bit here. The only one I don't think you touch is the Hoglander, Pettersson, Garland line right now.
It's going good.
But aside from that, it gives them opportunity to play around with things a little bit. The hope is just that this isn't going to be a injury that keeps him out long term. And if it's day to day, well, here's the thing with day to day in the Canucks.
Oh, we know.
You never know if it's actually day-to-day. So we'll see.
Wasn't Pearson day-to-day?
I believe so.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of day-to-days, though. And that happens. We'll see how it evolves as the week and the season goes on. But, hey, you know what? Maybe that explains why Elias Lindholm hasn't been as productive offensively in, I was going to say, the last few games, but more than that.
Well, in his tenure.
Basically his tenure in Vancouver, aside from the first few games where he had four goals in the first four, I believe, two multi-goal games. But it does give some guys opportunity. And one thing I'm kind of interested in seeing, and we saw it a bit last game, and I wonder if it gets some more run now, is Podkolzin with JT Miller and Brock Besser.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it with Hoglander early in the year, too. He would get opportunity in the top six, and he would work his way back down to the bottom six. And so sometimes it takes a few chances, but I just wonder if that's something they go for now. And then your third line could be something like Ilya Mikheyev, Teddy Bluger, and maybe Pius Suter over there as well. And that's something that would, like, it's not going to be a great offensive line, but I think that line could do decently well in matchup minutes.
Let me ask you something.
Yep.
Since we're talking about lines, you think that Pettersson line with Hoglander and Garland is big enough for the playoffs?
No. But, like, if they're... I'll need to see it first.
Like, is it matchup dependent?
It's probably matchup dependent. Like, if they're matching up against Vegas, that's going to... Like, Vegas has a big defense. Yeah. And that's going to be really tough. But
yeah, Pettersson keeps falling down.
Okay, come on, Don. get off the falling down train. What I will say is Hoglander and Garland do play above their size.
Yeah, certainly.
They're great
on
the forecheck.
Yeah, sure.
They're energy guys. I would like to see it. And look, the other part of this is we will see the Canucks play against the Vegas Golden Knights before the season is over anyway. Mm-hmm. And the Edmonton Oilers, we'll see them tonight against the Kings. There are difficult teams and difficult matchups they're going to have before the postseason to see if this will work. But based on how it's playing right now, there's no reason to break it up. And I also, like, are you splitting up Hoglander and Pettersson?
No.
And
they're
then,
besties.
And then,
Hockey friends.
And then realistically, like, does the third guy on the line...
Why are you shaking your head, Victor?
I regret showing you that.
Why?
Oh, is it a video?
Yeah, it is.
I don't get the reference.
It's from the In-Betweeners. It's just iconic British humor.
And they're saying, soccer friends.
Football friends.
Yeah, they would be saying football because they're from England.
Oh, Mike Halford's on Toronto radio. Anyway.
Don't change the channel to Toronto Radio right now. Dom just lost us a bunch of listeners.
But no, you don't split Hoglander and Pettersson. They really are like besties. Like, keep them together.
So I guess
Garland's the expendable one on the line.
Is there someone you can put in Garland's spot where you're like, oh, this is a big line now? You know what I mean? There's nobody you're gonna put there that elevates it to a point where you're super confident and heavy. In heavy games. And I'm still, just to be clear, I'm still confident in their overall skill and their overall talent to, even if they're like playing against Vegas, to still be a capable line and provide offensively, especially if they continue to gain chemistry. I will say, like, I was very surprised that Garland and Pettersson worked this time, or seemed to be working this time, because every time we've seen it in the past, it has not worked. Just because they're both puck-dominant guys, it doesn't really, their styles don't really click. This time it seems to be working. But even as it has been working, I still think the two catalysts of it have been Pettersson and Hoglander, and Garland has been a very, very complimentary piece. He's been very good in that role, but is he's definitely the guy that if you were to switch someone in there, Garland's the one you take out. I wonder if maybe they tried Joshua there when he's healthy.
On the Pettersson line?
On the Pettersson line.
Bold.
Well, like,
I would sooner reunite Garland, Suter, and...
I'm thinking if they don't go that route. Because that's like option one.
Yeah.
But...
Well, option two.
Joshua... Well, yeah, I guess you want Garland to
keep,
stay.
Yeah, you want
to
keep
Garland. So, yeah, option two. But I just... I wonder... Because Joshua was playing really, really well before he got hurt.
Yeah.
And there was talk about all of those guys, well, except for maybe Bluger, but Joshua and Garland getting shots in the top six because they were playing so well and they deserved it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that line was so good together that they kind of, like, Tocchet was forced to keep them together. But realistically, if they had been just slightly worse, I wonder if Dakota Joshua would have gotten a shot in the top six. And maybe it shouldn't be with Pettersson and Hoglander. Maybe he fits better with Miller and Besser. I just wonder if they're going to experiment a little bit. And we talk about it with Elias Lindholm. Again, if you missed the news, if you're just tuning in, Elias Lindholm
day-to-day.
Not playing tonight for the Canucks. He is day-to-day, according to Rick Tocchet.
Who's coming out of the lineup if they're all fully healthy? PDG?
PDG or Niels Omon, I would say.
So then who's on that Miller-Besser line?
Mikheyev. I didn't mind Mikheyev there, okay. To be honest. I don't think it was...
Wouldn't you put Mikheyev back with Pettersson and Hoglander and then put Garland on with...
Well, I assume we're working under option one right now, where Garland is still with Pettersson. I really didn't mind Mikheyev with Miller and Besser, to be honest. I think it's something they might go back to in the playoffs just because it did have a... It looked good when they were together. Mikheyev, look, he can finish a little bit more, but in terms of overall play, I thought they played really, really well together. 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. This one, Jake the Snake. We play Edmonton once and Vegas twice. Watch how heavy they play the Canucks. An injury to our top guys going into the playoffs would be crucial for Vegas to get past us. If I'm on Vegas, I am hitting with intent. And that's in regards to, hey, maybe that top line's a little too small. But they're shifty.
Here's the thing, though, with Vegas, too, is that We're still kind of like snake bit from the matchups with Vegas in the past. And while there are still like a lot of pieces on this Canucks team that played then, it's a different structure.
Vancouver
humbled Vegas last game.
Yeah, but in the first game, Vegas took the wind out of Vancouver's sails. So look, there's two more games. We'll see how those ones
Who's
go.
On better form right now?
Canucks, for
there
sure.
There you go.
Canucks, for sure. And that's why, hey, maybe some people are warming up to the idea of playing Vegas in the first round. We'll see how it goes, and we'll see how tonight's game goes. It's a 6 o'clock puck drop, by the way, national game, Vancouver and L.A. Coming up next, it is Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar live from Rogers Arena as they get you set for tonight's game. Appreciate everyone listening, everyone texting in. Thanks to Victor as well, behind the board, producing the show. Thanks to my co-host, Dom.
Well wishes to Sat.
Well wishes to Sat. Feel better. I have been Josh Elliott-Wolf. This has been The People Show on Sportsnet 650.